we do have, I'm particularly alerted to this because the staffing we had this morning was everyone reporting on what we're doing with groups and reporting on what we were doing with age people, and I was very pleased with the report that they're working against, and I'm very alerted to that. But we do have that, and also I should mention Jim Michael's work of room.
I think we're far enough into this.
Yes, I would like to add to what I said about the various kinds of services here that since 1959 we have had a joint program with what was then the Irene Kaufman Center, and which is now the Jewish Community Center's Anathan House, Council of Jewish Women, or whatever it is. But this is a program that we have enjoyed a great deal. We hope that the older people have too, the purpose of which is to educate older people in groups regarding various aspects of aging, helping them to understand themselves better, as well as to understand what the resources are that are available to them, both within themselves and in the community. And this is now the 16th year that we have been doing that. Of course, it has changed. The direction has changed over the years. But I think they regard it as a worthwhile program at the community center, and certainly we do. And in addition to that, we have in the last few years worked with the community college of Allegheny County and other kinds of educational projects. They have a special grant for this. And this is both in the direction of both educating other kinds of professionals, nurses, ministers, homemakers, volunteers, in better understanding of the aged, but also they have classes for aged people themselves and understanding themselves better. And one of our staff members, Barbara Ruffman, reported this morning on a very interesting series that she had done at Lambeth House, which is a housing facility for the aged sponsored by the Episcopal Church, and she's presently conducting a class like this at Vintage House, which is a recreation and education center for older people in the East Liberty Shadyside area that's sponsored by the East End Cooperative Ministry and by the Junior League and third organization, some church group. So that we while we don't spend a major part of our time doing this, we do undertake certain educational responsibilities in the community. In addition to that, I should mention that we also do the application interviews for Riverview, which is the housing facility of the United Jewish Federation, and that we have one caseworker, June Whitehill, who spends half her time there, maybe better than half her time, 3 afternoons a week. She does both the application service and also the major part of the casework service for those tenants at Riverview who require some form of casework service. And this is an affiliation that we're very happy about, and we've learned a lot from it, and we hope that it's been a useful service to them.
I know that you're considered an authority on the aging. Do you do much traveling or speaking in other cities, or much coordination with other organizations within the city?
Not really. The only activity I have had in that regard has been with the National Conference of Jewish Communal Services. That's where that was given. And I serve on their the program committee of one unit of that, and there are two colleagues and myself. One is Ruth Cohn, who's the supervisor of services to aged at the Philadelphia agency, and the other is Sarah Letterman, who is a unit supervisor at the very large, elaborate service that they have in New York called JASA, that's Jewish Association for Services for Aged. And both of them are very well-recognized people in the field, and the three of us are to be responsible for those programs having to do with the aged. Other than that, the only responsibility I have taken has been with Family Service Association, and that really was not with regard to the aged. It was through the aged that I got into it. I did serve briefly on their National Advisory Committee for the aged, but that's defunct now. But I worked for 5 years on an institute committee for them. That's the it was then called the Middle Atlantic Region of the Family Service Association of America, and they conduct a week-long institute for really postgraduate education, I guess you would call it. Served on the program committee for 5 years and was chairman for 2 years. But at that time, those of us who were interested in AGED couldn't sell them on any AGED programs. There didn't seem to be that interest in that particular group at that time, which maybe tells you something. Since then, they have had, I think, two programs on the AGED since then. Oh, but that's all.
I might just check this tape.
Aside from the fact that there's certainly much more interest in the problems of the aged now,
mm-hmm.
how else do you think attitudes have changed within social agency?
Oh, that would really be very hard for me to say because I'm not that much with colleagues who work in other areas of social work. And I think that the aged group, that is workers who work with the aged, form a rather special group. That may be my bias, but I read somewhere that gerontology is more of a cause than a science, and that those of us who are in it are in it because we couldn't do anything else and are really dedicated, although that sounds awfully corny, I can't think of a better word. Certainly within the field itself, there has been a growing recognition of the needs of the aged and the need to train people through this. And really, when we began in 1959, we were almost like pioneers. It seems strange, but this was so. And I remember going to a conference in 1960, which chronologically isn't all that far back, but it was a governor's conference on the aging, and Leonard Eggerman was there. He had just undertaken the medical directorship of what was called Western Geriatric Center, which was a psychiatric diagnostic center for the aged. And Mildred Lewick, who was my first colleague in this department, went, and I went, and her sister, Minnie Sussman, who was active in council, as you know, had some legislative interest in going to this conference. I'm trying to think who else went from Pittsburgh. But there was a feeling of excitement at that conference that I have never experienced since at any other conference. Like we were on the brink of something, and that it sounds so corny, I'm almost ashamed to say.
Abraham Herzl deliver a paper.
That was that famous paper. That was at the first White House conference.
Right,
that's now,
right.
That's a, you know that paper.
Yeah.
Brilliant paper, which is still being quoted. But it was not Herzl, it was Heschel.
Heschel.
Yes.
No,
this was a governor's conference, which was probably preparatory to that conference. And I honestly can't remember anything I learned there particularly. I chaired some kind of a session, and I don't even remember what it was about. But it was just this feeling of excitement and like we really were pioneers in a field that was going to become more and more important. And I think this has proved to be so. You really ought to talk with someone else about the other aspects of this. When I came into the field, there are certainly changes that I have observed as a practitioner from when I came in. The field was very heavily oriented to Freudian psychoanalytic psychology. This was the background that I was taught in 1937, in which I was taught as a student of child guidance, and I remember Harry Little, who was not only the director of the clinic, but was on the faculty at Carnegie Tech and taught elementary psychiatry to the social work students, and he said, this is the best explanation that I can find for human behavior, and until I find something else, this is the school of thought I'm going to follow. Well, certainly people coming into the field now are getting a much more eclectic kind of background than that. And there are all kinds of new therapies, new approaches, many of which, frankly, I am not familiar with because it's really all I can do. I can't even keep up with the literature in the aging field now. It's just a monument. But I think that if I were to make one statement, it would be that the field is much more eclectic than it was when I was training. And one notices it in practice in so many different ways. We were much more rigidly trained, and we were supposed to be much less personal, almost impersonal. Certainly we were taught to be empathetic and kind and supportive, but to share very little of ourselves. And we soon learned in services to Asia that you have to relate in a very different way. And it has to do particularly with physically touching clients or embracing them when it's appropriate to do so. I think my teachers back in 37 or 38 would have been absolutely scandalized if any of us had come in and reported this kind of activity. I think that's still probably true in other areas of social work, but we learned working with aged that we have to forget some of the things that we were taught, although I hope that we still know when we do these things that we know why we're doing it and that we're doing it purposefully.
That's very interesting. At these national conferences, mm-hmm. or statewide, do you find newer kinds, different kinds of agencies interested in this than have been when you were first started?
That's really hard to say because the national conferences that I have attended for the past 5, 6, 7 years have all been Jewish conferences. And there has always, not always, but within my recall, been a much heavier commitment to services to aged within the Jewish group. When I was regularly attending the Family Service Institutes, I think I mentioned already, there was not even too much interest in education in that field. And when I would speak with workers from the non-sectarian agencies, they simply did not have the investment in services to aged. They were doing beautiful work in other fields. And I never could quite understand why it was, whether the people weren't coming to them or just what the difference was. But I don't know whether that's changed because I haven't been attending those conferences. So I really don't know. Certainly as far as the public field is concerned, there's much more interest when you think of the numbers of high-rises for the elderly that have been built, when you think of the whole organization of state services now into Area Agency on Aging, the fact that the county has an adult services, which is really services for the aged, although they also serve, I think, handicapped people. There certainly has been a mushrooming of publicly funded agencies. The RSVP, which is one of the action programs, has been an enormous growth of services to the aged. Oh. Attitude of the community. Look, I can remember when we were fighting for Medicare and when there were people on the board of this agency, not people, only one, who didn't think that we should have Medicare. And that's since 1959. It seems inconceivable now. That whole thing is now a matter of fact. I can still remember, and it sounds like ancient history, but it isn't really that long ago. The first patient that I had admitted to the hospital under Medicaid, and it was just such a godsend. It was like law had been written to rescue me out of an emergency.
Can you think of any real concrete goals that you would hope this kind of agency could serve in
for the future?
The future?
Well, I don't know whether it would be the function of this agency or not, but I certainly have some goals for the field. Now you're really going to hear a speech. What I am very concerned about as a practitioner and as a citizen who is herself in the older age bracket is the cultural attitude toward the aged. And the tendency that we have to infantilize the aged, to treat them without appropriate respect. And the insidious part of this is, it's the old Hitlerian thing that unfortunately this group has by and large bought the image of themselves that the culture has placed on them, and think of themselves as essentially powerless and not counting for very much. This is changing, but it's changing much too slowly. But I feel that it will not change until older people themselves change it. And I draw a real comparison to the feminist movement. And the next thing that I would like to see done, and I don't know whether it would be the function of our agency or the community centers, I would like to see consciousness-raising groups for the elderly, because I can't think of any other way that we can change this. A couple of weeks ago, I had an interesting experience. I spoke as part of a panel for the Institute for Higher Education and something else of higher education. One is a group from Pitt of members of all departments that have to do with higher education, doctoral education, and in education. And the other group is an organized group of all local colleges involved in this, and they had a retirement planning seminar, a day seminar. It's the first one for that particular group of people, educators in the higher education field. And what troubled me, we had excellent speakers. Dr. Vasey, who is the recently retired director of the Department of Gerontology at Michigan, which is the grandmother of all gerontological departments, was to have come, but he unfortunately was ill and couldn't come. And so Milton Sussman stepped into the breach and really did a very nice job, considering that he's not really a professional in this field. He's come more recently into it. And I think it's always hard when you're filling someone else's boots. But he did a very nice job, and Gilbert Love was on the panel, and some gentleman whose name escapes me, who is an older person himself and in semi-retirement, who'd formerly been a teacher of speech at Pitt. And after the main speaker and the panelists had stopped, I said that there was something that troubled me, and I wanted to make a statement, and that was the feeling that I was getting about equating old with bad and young with good. And it was interesting that of all the things that I said, and I talked a lot, that this was the thing that Gilbert Love picked up on and put in his column. And the point that I was trying to make, and I didn't make it as well as I should have, was that the greatest compliment that we can give to an older person, oh, is you still have such young ideas. Now, why should that be a compliment? In old China, that would have been an insult. And it's this. Some of them became a little defensive and said, oh, I didn't say that at all. I said retirement can be very good. That wasn't my point. My point was that how we equate these two stages of life. And one of the women really got it very nicely. She was someone from Chatham. I don't know who she was. And she has some educational project with dogs. I didn't understand it. And she said, well, I was just saying to my colleague the other day, there's something wrong when we're designing these dolls. We don't have any old dolls. We don't have any grandmother or grandfather dolls. And I knew she'd gotten the message exactly. So this, you know, you asked me what my goal is. Well, that's a very big goal, and I don't think I will live long enough to see it, but I would love to see this change take place of where age is not regarded as something to be dreaded, and where it is not a matter of an older person feeling that the nicest thing you can say to them is that you look so young or you have such young ideas. I think it's the young ideas that bother me more than anything. Now, why shouldn't it be a compliment to say, oh, I'm so impressed with the maturity of your ideas?
Excuse me.
I'd like to see the social, Medicare pay for prescription drugs so that older people don't have to impoverish themselves to fill their prescriptions. They're impoverished already, but so that they don't have to take from their food budget. I'd like to see more housing for older people.
Margaret Mead spoke here last spring, and her feelings about the aging are that your problems would be decreased if each community was not so segregated, that the suburbs are young and middle-aged families with children, with no elderly, and that if only there were places where they could get together.
Are you asking me if I agree with that?
Yes, do you?
Yes and no. I've discussed this with older people, and I think I'm reflecting their opinion maybe more than my own. And I certainly haven't taken a scientific sample, and the ones whom I have discussed it with, for the most part, have been within the Jewish group. We talked about this particularly in reference to housing and segregated housing. Most of them seem to feel that they would rather be in housing where there are other older people, but they would like to be where they could see children and interact with them, but not be living next door to them or on top of them or underneath them. For myself, personally, and I've been criticized for this by people who have visited them, and I never have visited any of these elegant retirement colonies myself, but to me, it's... That won't go on the tank, the shutter. But this would certainly not want to be, this would not be the lifestyle that I would want for myself, where everyone is retired and where you're constantly thinking of all these fun things that you can do to keep busy, the bridge and the this and the that and the other thing. I guess it's like everything else. If it works for you, it's fine. I just don't think it would work for me. And, well, I have a wonderful friend and colleague, and I guess I'm vain enough to say he's almost a protege of mine, and that's a man by the name of Jack Leff. And Jack Leff is no longer, but was, the first person of state cabinet rank in the field of the elderly in Massachusetts. They created a Department of Elder Affairs, and Jack Leff was the first secretary. With the change of administration, that changed. But he not only had the appointment, but he created the situation in Massachusetts that made this cabinet position possible. And when he first went to Massachusetts, it was as a graduate student, and he part of his work had to do with working with the elderly in the Roxbury neighborhood. And he did such a fantastic job that he never really finished his master's degree because he came so into the community, and he came back after a year or two and he told me what he was doing in the neighborhoods and the kinds of activities. And I said, well, are you having fun or are your people having fun? And he said, we're much too busy to be having fun. And it was a put down which I really deserved and I've never forgotten it. And then at that same Jewish conference where we had the panel that I'm giving you the reprint of, I visited his installation there, and Mildred Lewick was with me, this colleague that I referred to, and we insisted that we learn more. And one morning visiting Jack Leff's facility than we learned in the whole 5 days of the conference, and it was a good conference. I don't mean that derogatorily, but he had a way of sparking his people and sparking his staff to get into, I don't like to use the word meaningful because it's one of those overused words, but we attended their staff meeting. Of course, they had the advantage of being right in Boston, which is the capital of the Commonwealth, and there was some issue, I can't remember, but some legislative issue. And he said to his staff, now the buses are going to be here Tuesday morning at such and such a time, and every one of the staff members who's going out is responsible, whether you're a homemaker or a nutritionist or a caseworker or whatever, to tell the people that we're going to the legislature on this issue, and Jack or John or whatever his name was, he was the Vista worker, he will be there, and on the way down, he will explain more fully to everyone what the issues are. Now, these people were really fully invested in some kind of activity, and it really didn't matter whether they got this particular thing in the budget of the public assistance thing, which was may have been what they were going. The thing was that they had some feeling of effectiveness as people, and they weren't just sitting there, you know, making flowers or playing bingo. Not that I have any objection to that. In fact, my friend Kathy Wallace reversed my attitudes about that and helped me understand the importance of bingo for older people. She took me down too. But I understood what he meant then when he said we're too busy to this is the sort of thing that I want to see. And you don't, I don't think, see this in the retirement colonies. Doesn't really quite answer your question about, you know, what Margaret Mead said. Certainly, I think the transiency of our population has had a great deal to do with older people and the kind of support systems that they can count on from the family, and a number of cases that we get can be related directly to the transiency of the society where children are concerned because the parent is in a different community and they have feelings of having abandoned them, and you know, what can we do to fill that gap, and you know, in locophilia, I guess that's the position that we take. I don't know if that answers your question.
Okay. Thank you. We haven't talked very much about your children. Would you like to tell us?
Oh, I'll be glad to identify them for you. My elder child is my daughter Ellen, and anyone can see any day of any week on Channel 2 what woman is. But this program that she has is really only a small part of her activity. She's presently enrolled as a doctoral student in the Department of Psychology at Pitt. She's married. She has two little children. Leads a very busy life. She also takes time out once in a while to speak for United Jewish Federation and do things like that. And I have a son who is unmarried, who is an attorney. It's Frederick.
We don't have their birthday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, Ellen's birthday is July 14th, 1944. And Fred was born in January 10th, 47. That's right, he'll be 29, that would be right, in January 36, that's 47.
Oh, Ellen's daughter's children's names.
No. Ellen's daughter's names.
Yeah, that's right.
Erica, who is 6, will be 7 in February. Antonia, who is 4, will be 5 next month.
You